Thank you. Can you hear me? Okay, good. I may step away from the mic if you can't hear any of us at any point. Just kind of wave your hand, let us know, and we'll speak more directly into the microphone. And anybody who's sitting in the back, want to move forward, feel free. We won't hurt you. So
speak for yourself.
So my name's Kara Sassone, and I'm the social media specialist and web producer with the College of Science. And today we are talking with three social media experts about just that, about social media. So I wanted to show you there we go. We can read along with me as well. But starting on the far end, we have Jeff Cutler, who is a freelance journalist and social media trainer with the Society of Professional Journalists, as well as other endeavors. And he's a content specialist who talks about content marketing, the use of social tools for journalists and businesses, and branding. He is on Twitter, he's on Facebook, he's on Instagram, he's on Flickr, he's on all of these. So he's gonna dive into that a little bit.
I'm also an alum.
Of course, and how dare I forget?
I know. I thought that was the most important thing. I went to Northeastern back when they had typewriters, but
which are on display.
Yeah. In their museum.
They are.
Jeff will join them shortly.
Right.
Lisa Vanderpool is director of media and content strategy at Ink House Media and Marketing. Before that, she was working as a reporter reporter for Boston Business Journal, broadcast and social media editor, and was also on WBZ-TV on a very regular basis talking about business and social media and how it's all intertwined. And before that, she was a reporter at Adweek magazine. And then Todd Van, and I always mispronounce your last name.
Yeah.
Hoosier. Because I want to say Hoosier.
That works too. I change on a daily basis.
But Todd Van Hoosier, professional communicator and technologist with more than 15 years of experience in marketing and technology. And he has quite a list of folks that he's involved with and groups that he's involved with. But he is also, member of the Social Media Club's board of directors, and was a founding member, I believe, of that. So has lots to say about social media. Diving right into it, I think that the best way to get this started, and we want to have interaction with you guys too. So along the way, if you guys have questions, if you have comments, if you have things that you want to add, by all means, please let us know. Raise your hand. Speak up. We want it to be as interactive and as interactive as possible. But I think diving right into it, you know, we hear a lot about social media and food and cats. I mean, that's what it's here for, right? To share pictures of food, what we're eating, what we had for breakfast, what we're gonna have for lunch, and the cats, because they're funny and they do funny things. But it's so much more than that. And so I think maybe starting on the far end, Jeff, I know that,
sure,
that you love food and you love cats.
I do.
You love more than that.
I do. I think the thing you have to think about when you're contemplating the use of social media, there are two things. One is that social media is not new. What I tell people when I go do a training is that social media can be as simple as a postcard. A written paper postcard, because you can fit about 140 characters on the back, and everyone at the post office and everyone in your household is going to read what's on the back, which is what they can do with every tweet that you send out. But you have to also think about the communities that you want to connect with when you're using social. So if the community you're talking to cares about your cat, then fine, keep tweeting, but have a method in mind, have a goal in mind for using these networks and using these tools. I think about customer service phone lines and how companies get stymied when social media is implemented in their business. They're like, well, how do we answer a customer service question via Twitter? And I'm like, well, Imagine if you picked up the phone and someone called your 800 number with that same question. How would you respond? It's the same thing. It all comes down to just communication.
I think that people who think that Twitter is all about everybody tweeting what they're having for lunch, these are people who haven't spent a lot of time on Twitter. Besides being such a great vehicle for communicating whatever message it is that you have or whatever brand you're trying to build, it's also such an amazing news source. And, you know, it started revolutions. All you have to do is spend a little bit of time on Twitter. I always tell people, for people who don't know a lot about it, spend time on it, write those tweets, and you'll see pretty quickly that it's a lot more than food and cats. Not that I'm going to badmouth cats at all, because I'm known for tweeting pictures of my cat. But, and it's true, if that's your audience, then it doesn't matter. But I also think Twitter, in addition to sort of being this amazing news channel, it kind of democratizes you know, these broadcast channels, and everybody is their own broadcast channel, and that can be extremely powerful. Sometimes people don't even realize it. Just last night I was taking the Acela home from New York City, and it was really late, and it just seemed like the air conditioning was being just ratcheted up more and more and more. And so finally, I hate complaining on Twitter, but I don't think it was snarky, but I just said, you know, I learned something new about, I don't know if you have that, Kara, that tweet, but I said I learned something new about Amtrak tonight. It's really cold. I think I said hashtag let me off. And about 5 minutes later, Amtrak tweeted back at me. And I didn't do that to provoke a reaction or anything like that, but it does kind of show what you can do. Yeah. That's pretty minor, but it was nice that they tweeted back.
Yeah.
Yeah, they even said, let the conductor know so the temperature can be regulated. So, and you responded, though, that's very nice. It was just a little too minor.
I felt bad. Yes.
But you got a response?
I got a response, and I mean, you know, and it kudos to them, too,
yeah.
Because I'll see people on the flip side on Twitter saying, you know, I've tweeted American Airlines 50 times today and I haven't gotten a response. I think it still really scares some brands, even though some brands, you know, Boloco in Boston is really big and they've made some missteps, but they're really famous for kind of tweeting with their customers, tweeting back at them, giving them deals, or just sort of answering their complaints, why they got a bad burrito for lunch. But I think it's really smart, and if you're talking about it in the context of brands, whether you're just one person or a huge brand like Amtrak, I think it's just very nice. It sort of gives that personal attention. They can just talk to their customers one-on-one.
And just one other quick note. If you notice the timestamp, so Lisa sent hers at 9:41. They responded at 9:42.
Yeah.
I mean, so it might not even have been a full minute.
I'm sure they have quite a sizable team over there. Even if it's like 6 or 7 people, that's still, they probably have someone monitoring it all the time,
right.
I would imagine.
I mean, clearly after hours, normally
exactly.
Hours,
right.
But they were monitoring it.
Yep.
And the cool thing is they seem to have their whole team trained very well in using the tool itself,
right.
Where there are some companies that don't really know how to use the tool. They get a little lost. I think some of the champions in this area now are Fios and Comcast. And people talk about them being some of the first companies that got into using social as a customer service tool. But now they've gotten to the point where they have a Twitter script, which is the same thing you used to get in a customer service phone line. You'd have a script to walk people through questions. But one of their first questions is, DM us your account number and phone number, and we'll get back to you. And they know that they have to follow you to allow you to send them a direct message, which is not something that everyone knows right off the bat anyway. And that's just Twitter. There are 1,000 other examples on different networks.
Yeah.
What about you, Todd? How do you do more than just cats and food?
Well, I tell my students and classes that I teach and my clients to think about the rule of thirds, where you do kind of, I try to mix it up a little bit. I will do maybe 1/3 of my tweets are, you know, self-promotional, me, hi, you know, I'm great. We all know that. But no, thank you. I wasn't fishing, but you know, thanks. Another third would be kind of interactions or promotions of others, so kind of paying it forward a little bit, replying, interacting with other Twitter accounts or other entities. And then the last third would be not self-serving, but other-serving informational posts, links to articles, curation, things like that. I think that's a nice mix. You know, when I look at someone's social presence, if everything they write about is, hi, I'm here and I'm great, I'm probably not going to follow them because I don't care. We all want to hear about ourselves, right? So if someone can show me something that might actually help me, I'm much more willing to share that. So I just have a couple other thoughts. You know, my other thought on social is, you know, the joke is nobody cares what you had for breakfast or for lunch, but in fact, people do. I mean, I get a lot of responses when I Instagram my breakfast, or you know, tweet about you know where I am for lunch. You know, if that's all you do, again, it might be problematic. But you know, if it's something that people are expecting, people might follow you because you tweet about your cats or because you tweet about breakfast. And if that's something that you're going to do, set the expectations accordingly. Change your bio on Twitter to say, you know, hi, I'm a Northeastern student and I tweet about cats and breakfast. You know, and people have that expectation. The other kind of thing that I think about social media in general is I always call it a tool for enhanced serendipity, right? You know, people talk about people ask me why I spend so much time on social media, and the answer is, well, I really don't spend that much time on social media, it just kind of looks like it. But I do it because it makes interesting things slightly more likely to happen to me. And that's one of the biggest reasons why I got into social media, and it continues to be the biggest reason why I stay. Mm-hmm.
Can you give us, for instance, when you say things happen to you, what do you mean by that?
Well, interactions, you know, with people who I find very interesting, people that I've tried to interact with in person but didn't get a chance to, you know, I might send a tweet out to them and they might respond, or it's just, you know, I go to a lot of events because I don't like living my life virtually, and I actually do want to interact with people face to face, crazy as that might seem for a social media guy, but but because I have that social media background, I can come to an event like this and you know, ask Jeff how was the honeymoon, ask Lisa how the cats are, ask Kara how her vacation was, because you know, I've seen that all over. She did remind me that she was on vacation face to face. So that kind of stuff is kind of what I'm talking about. It just kind of helps me as a communicator. It helps my kind of lousy interpersonal skills a little bit too.
So I'm sure that a lot of you are already on social, whether it be Twitter or Facebook or Instagram or any other of the numerous. And I mean, I feel like every day there's another platform. There's another one that might die off as well. But I feel like everybody, not everybody, but most students at this point are on social in some manner or another already from coming into Northeastern. So, looking at how we move forward in our studies and looking at how we're going to look for co-ops, look for jobs, interact with potential other professionals, how do you make sure to treat personal and professional differently, or is it a merging of the two? How do you make sure that you portray yourself in a way that you would want to?
You're going to start at this end again?
Whoever wants to pick it up.
I think you still have to think about skilled communication and how you're presenting yourself in every arena and how people are going to perceive you. I may have the easiest job on the panel and up front here because as a freelancer, as a career freelancer, everything I tweet can relate to both personal and professional stuff. And I've met everyone up at the front here through social, pretty much. Todd and I didn't know each other before. We were together on a Twitter or Facebook in the Boston area. I've gotten a number of jobs from putting food photos out there. I got upgraded on a flight because I tweeted about a honeymoon to JetBlue and they upgraded me into the even more seats. And those are on a personal level. From a professional level, I got a training gig with the Society of Professional Journalists because I was at an annual conference tweeting about one of their sessions. And I was just talking about what was going on in front of me, and they said, look, it seems that you use these tools, you already know how to leverage them and communicate, and you're within our community. We'd like to hire you to go do trainings for other people in this area. So it's a little crossover for me. I think when you're trying to present a more professional appearance, and if you have certain compartments in your life, then you might want to treat different networks differently. Like Twitter and Facebook on personal pages might just be random, might be cats and food. Your LinkedIn, I don't post all my food photos or all my random stuff over to LinkedIn. The LinkedIn stuff I post are when I speak at sessions like this, or when I go travel and do a training, or if I've researched something, or if I'm doing some work and have written a new blog post or reported something for a newspaper. I'll put that on LinkedIn or on my professional Facebook page or on my Google Plus page, just because that network is known for being effective in a different area. So I think first you have to know the networks as well, and also know yourself, and it goes back to knowing what goals you have for these tools.
I think there is a difference in how I treat all the social networks I'm on, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Vine, etc. But that being said, in general, I'm always very careful to kind of keep them all pretty professional, even though with Facebook is, I keep it private and I'm just friends with people who I know. Some people kind of open it way up. I still don't post. Some people are pretty open on Facebook, as everyone here knows, and I don't kind of post musings on everyday life, and I'm still pretty private, but that's probably just me. And definitely for LinkedIn, it's extremely buttoned up. I have more fun on Twitter, but I still always think about, before I send every single tweet, I think about what, kind of this means, putting this out there, because I was a reporter for a long time, and now I do public relations. So when I was a journalist, I was extremely careful about not expressing my opinion about news events and companies that I was covering, and even just everyday brands. I was reluctant to say, ooh, I love the Gap. I mean, occasionally I would post things like that, but that was just sort of as it relates to my field, and now I'm in public relations working for a bunch of different brands, and I'm also careful about that. So, but that's just as it relates to my job. I think, you know, it's different for everybody. But I still, that being said, social media is fun, and, you know, you want to engage with people. So, as Todd was saying before, I definitely mix it up. I'll share vacation photos. I won't share 10 tweets in a row, and I would never tweet a picture of myself in a bikini or something like that, but I definitely will mix it up on Twitter, whereas, you know, LinkedIn, it's extremely buttoned up. And LinkedIn, I'll pretty much link in with anybody. If I've heard of the company, I'll link in with you. I don't have to be best friends with you, whereas Facebook, it's a private little group. So there is a big difference, but...
I was going to jump off on that because you had talked about connecting with certain people in certain networks. Do you have a philosophy for Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn and G+, and you mentioned the LinkedIn
one. I definitely do, yeah. So LinkedIn, a long time ago I had heard, you should try to connect with everybody. And so, like I said, I mean, if there's someone who, it's just a name and they're not associated with the company, and so I don't connect with every single person, but most people, it's pretty broad range of people that I'm connected with on LinkedIn. Because I think that's really helpful. You know, it's just sort of this big professional network. Facebook, I really have to know you and be friends with you. And then, yeah, Twitter, I mean, if someone follows me and they're a real person and I look over their tweets, and I don't care if they have 10 followers or what, I'll usually follow them back. I think I'm following over 4,000 people on Twitter. I mean, that's kind of, for me, that's the whole point. You know, I don't need to just follow 200 people because that makes me look cool. You know, I want to see all the tweets. And then Instagram too, not really on purpose, but it's a lot of people I know. That's kind of whose photos I want to look at are usually people that I know. So that's kind of how I break it down. And actually for Google Plus, I have a Google Plus, but I really don't use it. So, yeah.
You know, my view is that as you as students have kind of maybe four options for you, usually you start out and it's all personal. You know, you've got your Facebook, or you start out with, you know, your phone messaging, and then go on to Snapchat, and then you go on to Facebook, or whatever it is. However you evolved, it's mostly personal. Then you start getting to your junior year, your senior year, and you're like, oh crap, all right, I guess I gotta get on LinkedIn and start thinking a little more about the professional networks. Maybe I should be tweeting. And then you start, you know, evolving, and you have this mix of kind of personal and then professional or soon to be professional lives. And then you have a choice to make. You can stick to being totally personal, but if you're oversharing very personal stuff, remember that even if you're, you know, even if you're Facebook friends with only a few number of people, and you've got a private Instagram account, and you've got a locked Twitter account or a private Twitter account, doesn't mean that it's private. You know, you realize that, right? That stuff gets out. Snapchat photos get out. You can take a screenshot of pretty much anything and share it, and then all of a sudden something that you thought was really personal is out there for the whole world to see. So I generally don't recommend, you know, trying to be just personal out there and hoping to God that, you know, it doesn't get out there. On the flip side of that is being only professional and only tweeting about business stuff. And you know, even major brands today are trying to remind people that they're people too. Even the Supreme Court might agree with that, unfortunately, that companies are people. But you know, I as an individual don't really want to interact with a brand. I want to have a conversation with a person at a brand and an interesting person. I think we are much more attracted to humans and people who speak human, and not just corporate speak. So you have a choice. You can try to lead a split life and have, you know, your personal life and your public life, and ne'er the twain shall meet. I don't recommend that. Or you can take the approach that I think both Jeff and Lisa are suggesting, which is treat each network just a little bit differently. And you know, you have a place where you can be a little more personal. You have a place where you can be a little more professional. For me, those places are Facebook and LinkedIn for the former, or Facebook and Instagram for the former, and LinkedIn for the latter, you know, the more professional stuff. And Google Plus is kind of in the middle there. And you just choose your networks and pick what works for you and share different things. And you might be surprised at the different people that end up following you on these different networks. Just remember that nothing is ever private. I mean, you should.
It's a good rule to live by.
One of the things that we talked about when we were getting ready to do this presentation was whether anybody on the panel had found anything that was embarrassing, because it happens, you know. Somebody posts something, it goes viral, it gets, you know, really blown up, and it's pretty scary. Lisa shared with me an article from Huffington Post that was just posted this week. Can you all see the headline? So this woman, Samantha Lynn Goody, drunk girl, blows
yellow girl.
341, which is wild.
Yeah, that's like you're in a stupor, apparently.
Right, like,
yeah.
I don't know how she was still.
Yeah, she's dead.
Exactly, especially since she's
in jail and tweets, YOLO, you only live once. So apparently, 22-year-old college student at a football game tried to jump on the field, and oh, by the way, the police tackled her. Gave her a breathalyzer test. She blew 341, dead spin, tracked down her mugshot. Super glamorous, I have to say. But she wasn't done. When she was released, she went on Twitter. Just went to jail. YOLO. Blew a 341 in jail. I'm surprised she didn't use the YOLO tag there.
I know. I know.
I'm gonna get 341 tattooed on me because it's so epic.
Yeah. I mean, I think besides the fact that obviously this is crazily inappropriate, and this isn't even, this is just the example from this week.
Right.
I mean, there's lots of examples that, especially people like us who've been following social media for years. So, but especially nowadays, not only, I mean, this is going to be on the internet forever. First of all, the tweets, her avatar, which is crazy, the mugshot.
Her Twitter name is Vodka Sam.
Vodka Sam. So that it's true that she's tweeting to a certain audience. But and then the other thing though is that I think, you know, people in these drunken moments, they do crazy things, and Gawker, Deadspin, Huffington Post, there are sites out there specifically that they don't care that it's an everyday person and not they want to write about this. And so then it goes viral.
And it's not just about those drunk moments. I mean, we hope that you are very responsible and that you don't have these moments and we don't get there. But I mean, this could be.
I mean, look at Geraldo Rivera tweeting a picture of himself in his underwear, and you know, obviously he was drunk, and the next day he totally regretted it. It was a really disturbing photo.
But the other thing that happened is, so it says that she had more than 20,000 followers on Twitter before she apparently deleted her account. But what happened was they cached the photos. So even though her account is deleted, we can still go and we can say, oh yeah, what is she doing? Oh, that's nice.
Not
so safe for work.
Right.
I mean, I apologize for the, you know, profanity,
and as crazy as she looks, she's probably going to want a job, I imagine, someday.
So
maybe that's going to be a reality show. I don't know. But
did you see how they courteously blurred her friend's face out of it? It's really a nice touch.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is, you know, one of those examples where something can go wrong, and you hope that you think about things before you put them out there.
It's almost cliche at this point, thinking before you tweet, but it's not cliche because there's tons and tons of people out there who don't do it. They just don't do it.
Mm-hmm. And the mindset should probably be, if you wouldn't put it down in writing, because this is in writing.
Yeah.
If you wouldn't put it down in writing and send it to your parents, then probably don't do it.
Or you're a prospective employer.
Yeah.
You know, is this what, would you show this in a job interview as you were interviewing? You know, I mean, that's worth asking yourself too as young people. And I think it's true. You maybe, you know, people have to set rules for themselves. You know, maybe I won't take the iPhone out when I'm partying with my friends. I mean, that's probably a good rule. You know, just put it away.
So talking about, I mean, this girl, Samantha, will probably want a job at some point. You guys have done lots of online searching and networking and looking at prospective employees or people you're interviewing. How do you use social, and how should students keep it in mind for when you're looking at those types of things?
Well, I just want to add one more anecdote that kind of falls into this category, but it's also, it's sort of on the flip side. I mean, you can make a huge mistake on Twitter, not, you know, when you're not drunk. This happened at another job, not the job I'm at now, but where a coworker of mine tweeted something not so nice about some other coworkers of mine, and there were some people in the office who are on Twitter all the time, and I saw it. Anyway, long story short, he had to send a whole apology to all of us, and it was really embarrassing for him, I'm sure. I never talked to him about it, but it was really, it's just one of those things that, I mean, he was not drunk, he got mad, and he posted something, and you just have to assume that even if 30 people follow you on Twitter, people in your circles, they're going to see those tweets. I know at my current job, I mean, it's awesome. Everybody knows all about social media, and people have lists on TweetDeck, InkHouse. They just, we all see each other's tweets. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it could, maybe you're not drunk, but maybe you're just angry, or you're young, so you're not, you know, up to speed on the professional stuff, which you're not when you're at that age. So just be aware of everything you're saying on Twitter.
Not everyone knows the intricacies of all these networks. People don't realize that if I send Todd a photo on Facebook and we don't have our privacy settings set correctly, or if I send one to another friend of mine, friends of that friend can then see that photo and then share it with their networks. So if you think you're having anything going on private on any of the networks, it's really not. It can be reshared and sent out there, and it's just something you have to be careful about. And that's why I said, if you're not willing to put it down in hard copy and send it to your network, or send it to someone you just met, then you might want to think twice about what you're doing for status updates.
I just wanted to play devil's advocate for a second. What was your name, Samantha?
Samantha.
So,
Vodka
is
Sam.
Vodka Sam. Is Vodka Sam going to be, I know, we're like that. Is Vodka Sam not going to be able to get a job because of this? Unfortunately, probably she will be able to get a job somewhere. She's going to get a job
at a liquor distributor.
At either a liquor place or Gawker or whoever else picked her up, right? But it is going to severely limit the kinds of jobs in which she's going to be able to apply for. I do know at my company, we're not horribly conservative, but something like that would definitely rule her out. So, I just want to...
And I do want to make the point, it's not just Trump tweets. And obviously, no. We want you guys to be responsible. If you're not of age, we want to make sure that you're not drinking. And all of, you know, I don't want it to be strictly about those types of things. The point that Lisa made in regards to, you know, if you get angry and you put something out there on Facebook or on Twitter, or you, then that's out there. And whether you're followed by 10 or 100 or 1,000, it is out there, and somebody could easily take a screen grab. They could share it with the people that you're talking about. They could share it with a potential employer. They could share it with a professor. They could share it with anybody. So, I've seen it where there have been tweets made about other people, and then, you know, we just kind of watch and see what else is said, and it could be a violation of the student code of ethics too. And so that's something else to keep in mind. If you're, you know, if you're saying something derogatory, if you're saying something that could harm somebody else, it's not just about, you know, blowing a 3-4-1 at a football game, or 3-1-4, or whatever it was, something crazy. It's beyond that. It's more than just that. You talked a little bit about the connections and the interactions that you've had. Have you had any times, and I think, Jeff, you mentioned that you and Todd actually met via social, and you've gotten jobs because of social. So can you talk a little
Sure.
bit more about that?
Yeah, there are probably two of the biggest highlights are that if you consider Match.com a social network, I met my wife, who I just got back from the honeymoon with, via a social network. And we didn't even meet face to face for probably a month and a half. We just text messaged back and forth and sort of did the whole, I don't know, courtship thing via social for a little bit. And we were together 7 years and got married 3 weeks ago and just got back from San Fran. So if you want to talk about success via social, that seems to work very well. From a professional standpoint, I had been on social on social as we know it, like Twitter, since 2006 type thing. So I had been doing social professionally for about 3 or 4 years when an environmental company contacted me. And they only knew about me via social networks. They knew I was a journalist. They knew that I covered a variety of stories, that I knew technology, and that I liked to travel and I liked to eat. So they said to me, look, we'll give you some money if you go down to cover the Gulf oil spill, the BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. And the reason they wanted to do that was because their community wanted a perspective they couldn't get from CNN and CBS and ABC and NBC. They wanted a freelance journalist to go down and do that. And the best way they could do that was locate someone via social who would be up to speed and willing and able to blog and throw YouTube videos up and do audio interviews and take photos and drive up and down the coast and be in New Orleans solo as a backpack journalist, if you want to use that term, for 2 weeks and get the perspective for their community that they couldn't get via full-time news. And they tweeted at me, and then we had a phone call, and I, to this day, I haven't met most of the team face-to-face, but their check for $10,000 cleared and paid for very nice things. And I had po' boys in New Orleans every day of the week when I was down there, and I saw some of the nicest beaches you'd ever see. And it's a huge professional accomplishment for me, because now I can talk to other agencies, be it brand or news agencies, and say, look, you can tell me where to go and I'll be your entire news team for a specific story and go do that road trip for you and deliver on that. And it's a skill set that now I can tout online, and other people have come to me and they've wanted other stuff done. I just got back from doing a thing in LA for Adobe. They do an annual conference, and they said, look, we don't need you to cover this from a journalistic perspective, but we want you to go out to LA and go to the Adobe Max conference and give us social support. And so they had a team of professionals and a huge agency from San Fran doing the same thing. Two of us individuals put out more impact and return on investment than the entire agency they hired to do that. So it's something that has benefited me, knowing the networks, knowing how to put this stuff out there, and having fun with it, being willing to go do that. So.
Yeah, I mean, just for me, I've made tons and tons of professional connections on Twitter. And, you know, when I was a reporter, I definitely mined Twitter and LinkedIn for story ideas, made connections. And now, doing public relations, I use it to kind of keep up my relationship with reporters and reach out to new reporters. So it's extremely useful. It's different than just emailing someone a cold email. You know, it's sort of, you know, you can follow them and retweet them, and whether they like it or not, I mean, it depends on how many followers they have, but they're probably going to notice you, and they're going to look at you and say, oh yeah, she seems pretty normal too. She was a writer. And it's just sort of, so, I mean, I've found it extremely useful. I don't know if I've gotten a job through it. I can't really say, but I know that my current employer, you know, they got to know me through my stories and through my social media presence and also television. But I used Twitter to kind of connect all those things. I always tweeted my stories and I tweeted TV segments in addition to tweeting other people's content and kind of, you know, at replying to people. So I've always used it as a networking tool for myself. I use LinkedIn too, but I've always thought Twitter was extremely powerful. And I think that I know that a lot of people who kind of are in our sort of group of people who are really active on social media in Boston have used Twitter to get jobs. It's been written about in the Boston Globe. And so I do think it's worthwhile to kind of get in and just, you know, make it look really professional. You know, have a normal looking picture and just start kind of tweeting and getting into it.
Yeah, Lisa and I are both in the PR world, and you know, I know my agency hired one person in particular specifically because of the incredible relationships that she had on Twitter with the journalist community that we were trying to target for a few of our clients. Mm-hmm. You know, we still do a fair amount. Most of our pitching is still, you know, picking up the phone and sending emails. But I'll tell you, a lot of it is, you know, relationships with social media, and those really, really help in breaking through. It's like you've got that credibility because there's that context. Mm-hmm.
So what is digital etiquette?
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Was
there a question?
I had a question. I work in cooperative education, mm-hmm. and I use LinkedIn to connect with people for job development purposes. Mm-hmm. And I often think about Twitter. I mean, I have a Twitter account. I kind of follow it, but definitely a novice and don't really understand what my strategy would be for job development purposes. Mm-hmm. And I work with health science students in speech, language, pathology, audiology. So mm-hmm. it's healthcare.
Okay.
Who do you have as a network via LinkedIn, and who would you want to have as a network via Twitter? And I ask that because your Twitter network might be completely student-based. So you might be just sending out tips, and not saying that broadcast as a strategy for Twitter is a great thing, but you might want to just send out reminders and tips and other things so they can see your Twitter feed as a co-op news stream. So, hey, you got a week left to get in your paperwork or whatever to that point, or remember we have openings over here if you need your resume redone, end of the quarter is coming. Just information that students can use And you don't have to think of that as connecting professionally with brands and companies that you're placing people at. But then you have two different, distinctly different tools that work well in each area, and you're not going to gum up your LinkedIn account with all student connections.
And I do use the LinkedIn for the networking, the healthcare, and trying to job develop, but I wondered, could I use Twitter for the job development piece? I understand what you're saying about the students and giving information. Could I use Twitter for job development?
It might be much more useful to use it as a search tool. So to set up some lists there and search the healthcare field and find out what different organizations are saying. So using Twitter and following streams as opposed to being very active there. So instead of doing a lot of status updates there, why not just follow what they're saying? Mm-hmm. And you'll get some updates every time someone has acquired someone. So you're like, oh, Aetna is now part of whatever, or Partners Healthcare bought another hospital. So, okay, they're going to be looking to hire new people because the people who are acquired are going to say, well, I don't want to work under this umbrella. So it's another opportunity for you to place some people. So thinking about it from a search standpoint, go ahead.
I was just going to dive in and say, you know, I look at the different social networks a little differently from that kind of perspective, too. I used to say that I looked at, I looked at Facebook to keep in touch with people that I already know, LinkedIn to keep in touch with people I want to know, and Twitter to find people who I didn't think I wanted to know but do. And I just kind of use them a little differently.
And what about digital etiquette? I mean, you talk about reaching out to folks, you talk about, you know, a tweet might be better than a cold email, but how do you get that interaction? How do you get somebody's attention? And how do you not end up being like a stalker?
It's three words, and it's the three words I tell everyone I talk to, whether I'm training them on doing journalism work or via social or whatever. It's know your audience. Know what they're comfortable with. Know how they respond. Some journalists right now will not read a faxed in press release, ever. They're done with that. They're done with that world. They want to get their pitches via Twitter or via email only. But you still have a lot of editors and writers out there who want the fax printed out and brought to their desk and they want to look at it. So you have to know how people want to receive that information. And if you're applying for a job at a Fortune 100 company, you're probably thinking bond paper and printing the thing out and embossing your name on the thing and spending some money on that letter asking for an interview, whether it be informational or just to get in the door. And you can correct me if I'm wrong. I'm out of school for a little while, so I haven't had to look for many jobs. But there are some organizations that welcome your application via email. And there are a ton of job networks online that allow you to sign up. You have everything on Craigslist now, tells you a certain way to sign up, and Monster's out there, and there are jobs via LinkedIn, and there's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. It's just know your audience. I mean, it's there are some, in terms of when you're talking about talking to reporters, there are, as a reporter, I really didn't want people to tweet pitches at me. I didn't like that, and I didn't want direct messages. It just really felt sort of invasive, even though Twitter is, I follow a ton of people and it's really public. I just wanted the email. But I know that some journalists like it, and you can see it. They'll say, you know, they'll say, I'm going on vacation, so no more DM pitches for 2 weeks, because, you know, so you can, you know, pitch them on Twitter. But I think in general, sort of, you know, harassing people, sort of at replying them, especially when, you know, and I see people doing it every day, where you'll look at their Twitter feed and it's maybe it's a PR person or whoever it is, a company trying to get a certain group's attention, and just over and over again at replying the same message. It's spamming, it's even though it's on Twitter. And of course, the person's going to see it, but they're not going to like it. So, yeah. But it's just kind of figuring out how people want to be approached is a good rule, I think.
Well, I would say, you know, you can guess at that, or you can just ask. You know, I mean, as a PR person, one of the first things I do when I'm starting a new account is call up the journalists, you know, or tweet at them or whatever. A lot of times I'll just pick up the phone whenever possible and call them up and say, hey, I'm the new PR guy for this company. How do you want me to bug you? Because I'm going to pester you one way or another, so tell me the best way to do it. And most of the journalists that I deal with appreciate the candor and, you know, will tell me that. And if I actually follow what they tell me to do, most of them are pretty happy to interact with me. So,
it's a little bit out of the topic, but you know what is next in the social media? We already share pictures, we already share videos, we already share quotes, we share everything. So what's next? What was the next step for the social media?
Firstborn. Gonna share your firstborn. You know, child sharing.
Yeah. I think it's stepping into life experiences. Yeah. You look at Google Glass, you look at different devices that follow you around through your whole day, and think back to Ed TV or whatever those other movies were that followed someone around through their life. But I think there's also going to be a backlash because I don't want to share all that stuff. I'm, as much as I share everything on here, overheards that I have in a coffee shop and pictures of the cat and comments about different brands and all the food and all that stuff. I don't share everything. I'm actually very strategic about that. And I think very carefully about the brand I've created. So I don't need someone over my shoulder seeing everything I do in my house or wherever. So I think it will pull back a little bit. I think the technology and how we share will just continue to advance. But that means better sound quality. That means better video. But we've been on the planet for how long? So everyone has experiences and stories they tell. We're just going to be telling them in a different way, but they're going to be the same stories. My cat killed a bird, brought it over to the porch, and that's a food photo for the cat. So.
Yeah, no, I agree. There's something called Google Now or something like that. I don't know if it's out there, but it's like you don't even say anything to your phone and you walk out of the house and it's like, oh, there's traffic on 128, you know, because it looked in your, you know, calendar and it knows where you go to work every day. And so, yes, I agree. I think that it's that kind of thing which people are probably going to push back on a little bit.
The benefit of that, the whole Google Now thing, is a proximity sensor and it knows what your routine is. Yep. Huge benefit in time savings, but where are we going to spend that time? Are we going to spend it on social networks more? Are we really going to carve out time and read a magazine or spend time meditating or spend time writing or thinking or reading or just being with other people? So I think, again, that's an adoption thing where people are going to have to really want to opt in for it to be a benefit. And how much time is it going to save you? Because if a corporation looks and says, oh, you're saving 20 hours a week, well, I want those 20 hours. Well, it's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I would call out, you know, Google Now, Google Glass, you know, really interesting developments that are going to have a big impact. The Internet of Everything, which, you know, in which everything has an IP address, you know, these chairs all get IP addresses and sensors, and at the end of the day, you know, Northeastern will, you won't have to send a report. Northeastern will know how many people sat in the chairs because there's a cheap little sensor in each chair that said how much time each person was sitting in that chair. I mean, that might not be 5 years out, that might be 20 years out. But the idea that, you know, pretty much everything is networked is gonna change a lot of things. And that ties into big data, it ties into a lot of privacy issues that are going on right now. It ties into what's it called, the quantified self, which is really very interesting, where essentially you're keeping track of as much data about your daily routine as possible. I mean, everybody has their Fitbits and their fuel bands and all that, where they're really starting to keep track of all this data, which is really powerful. I mean, when you can start seeing, oh, I understand all the inputs and all the outputs, and I realize that what I put in my body is making me fat, and if I eat this, I feel better. And if you start tracking all that stuff and getting all those feedback channels going on, you know, it can really change people, but it also opens up to a lot of issues around privacy, and I think there's going to be a lot of backlash around that.
Yeah. This could be turn into a crazy day-long talk about big data and more information begets more information and just where all of that goes. I mean, one of the technologies I covered at the most recent Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas was the smart house. And we heard about this back in the 50s when Disney was starting to put together exhibitions on when you get home, the stove will know to start because you're going to cook dinner and it's going to know to open the door when the husband comes home and it'll bring the paper in and stuff like that. But now we have houses that do that. And we have cars that you can lock the doors via your iPhone app no matter where the car is in the world. And you can turn on cameras in your house. You see the whole Fios security thing. And now you have fridges that you can just talk to them and they'll spit out ice or they'll change the ice making capability and they'll play music and they'll have transparent doors that will then be your TV screen and you can command everything via your voice. So some of this stuff is really cool. Some of it's really useless because I can go across a room and turn on a real TV. I don't need it to make ice for me and I can be cranky and yell at the kids and get them off my lawn, but maybe this is something you guys want. I don't know. You had a question over here.
Yes, how much misinformation or false information do you find on, say, Twitter or some of the other social media?
Oh, that's one of the questions coming up is how you verify someone is who they are or who a source is.
Mm-hmm.
About 5 years ago, hypothetically, a group of people were at a barbecue place in Cambridge. And some of those people, hypothetically, might look like me and some other people. And we said, let's see if we can create someone, create a person, and give them an account and slip them through on Facebook. That person now has hundreds of followers, and people interact with them every day. And they have a background, and they have a photo, and they have a history, and they have all that stuff, and they don't exist. So, again, hypothetically, if you went to friend that person, they may respond and they might give you the pat answers, or it might be a crowdsourced thing where a number of people had passwords to that account and everyone could respond accordingly. So you don't know. I mean, I exist because I'm here and I'm talking to you. But this hypothetical person may never have gone to Purdue and may have never have grown up on a farm and may never have moved here to Boston. And the photo might be some guy that was sitting in a coffee shop that looked the wrong way when somebody hypothetically took their photo and used it as a headshot. So stuff like that does happen, hypothetically.
How do you verify that? I mean, I just pulled up the president's Twitter account, and you see the little check mark for verified on Twitter. But what about on Facebook or on LinkedIn? How do you, is there a way?
One of the best ways, now that we're done with hypotheticals, there's a guy named Ted Daniel who's a reporter for Fox 25. And when he does news, he talks to a lot of people who are scanner tweeters. And what they do is tweet out the news that they hear on scanners. They're sitting in their mother's basements or whatever, listening to scanners, or they have more technology now. But they're tweeting out news that happens. And as a journalist, he has to be very careful not to re-report or share that information verbatim as it comes across. And he has to verify who these people are, so he's met with a number of them in person. He also, when he sees a piece of news come off, he calls people at other news stations to verify that they heard the same news. And he has the luxury of putting people on camera and quoting them in person to prove that, okay, well, here's the source, here's the person, the physical person telling me that, and we verify this person who is who they say they are. So a lot of it is done in real life. And as a reporter, you try and get someone on the phone and get secondary corroboration of their story. And you try and have met them in person if it's a big story. If someone calls me and tells me the tea is running a couple minutes late, I can easily verify that, and that's fine, not a big story. But if someone tells me that someone's been shot and they have eyewitness video and they want to share some stuff, you go to a bunch of deeper steps to verify that information. So it's just knowing the networks and sort of digging to the point where you can get that verification that people are who they say they are.
But it's I was just going to say, it's also just when you're on Twitter and you're not talking about people, that's another thing to just watch out for when you're retweeting news or just tweeting news articles. You know, it's been written about a lot in the past couple of months with some major news stories, including the Boston Marathon bombings with the scanner tweeters and just people who were jumping on news that wasn't verified, even major news organizations like CNN, you know, there was, you know, there were a lot of different things during the marathon story. One of them was that, you know, there were a bunch of people, including news people, saying that the guy who's alive right now, the brother's alive, that he was dead, and there were all these different things. And so it is, you know, it's, if you retweet wrong news that a bunch of other people are retweeting, it's not great. That's not going to prevent you from getting a job, but it's just something, nobody wants to do that. I'm always very careful when I'm, because I'm always glued to Twitter during events like that, and I will rarely retweet things. I'll retweet things, you know, from the New York Times or from Boston Police Department has an official Twitter account. I'm always very careful, and that's an official verified account, just so that I don't end up spreading the rumors that inevitably happen, because sort of these breaking news things that before they took place in newsrooms or people, the rumors were getting tossed around and then you got that second or third source to confirm it. Now that happens on Twitter and it ends up being a big kind of mess.
Can I jump back in for one quick second? The whole Gabby Giffords thing was and is an example of people not verifying the news, and companies like the New York Times and the Washington Post and CNN were guilty of it.
Gabby Giffords is the congresswoman from Arizona who was shot and for a short time was reported as having been killed.
Right. And what had happened were the people at the New York Times Twitter feed and the people at the Washington Post Twitter feed saw that it was reported on CNN and they took that as truth. So they tweeted it, and then someone like me or Todd or Lisa might see that and say, oh, well, CNN and the New York Times and the Washington Post all said it, so it must be true. And then we run with it and the whole world runs with it, and lo and behold, she's not dead. And it's not verified news. And none of those three organizations did their work by getting impartial sources and verification. NFL starts tonight. So during last year's Super Bowl, just a related story, Muhammad Ali was rumored to have been on his deathbed. And so he took to Twitter during the game and held up his Baltimore Ravens pennant to prove that he was still alive and that no, he wasn't dying. But stuff like that comes out on Twitter and you're like, how do you verify it? And sometimes you have to go right to the source. But it was as if he was holding up that day's paper just to prove I'm still here. So he had the balloon from the Ravens and he had the pennant, and that whole picture was up on Twitter almost immediately because he didn't want to distract from the excitement of the Super Bowl or any of that. So.
What was that Twitter account where the guy just posted, I'm still alive, like a famous old actor? Do you remember
that?
Yeah,
I remember. But it happened, the death hoaxes happened all the time.
Well, the Michael Jackson thing, even though he ended up being dead, that went for about half a day before anyone could really verify it.
Yeah. So, I mean, no one's asking you on this panel to take the same extreme measures that a major news organization would take before verifying a tweet.
I am.
But can I just ask one thing of you? Maybe you are, Jeff. I'm sorry. I don't want to speak. I apologize for speaking to you. Or putting words in your mouth. Can I just ask one thing of you? Click the link that you're retweeting. Just like look at where you're sending people, because I've made that mistake before. Like I occasionally tweet about science news, and it was a really interesting science story, and I tweeted away, and then like a few minutes later, someone tweeted at me and said, "You know, you just sent everybody to a creationist blog, right?" And I'm like, oh, God, no. I had no idea. So just like, you know,
it's true.
Click the link. That's not too much work, right?
No, not at all.
We are right at 1 o'clock right now, so. Are there any other questions that you guys have? Before you all get up and leave, I have put, and maybe you saw it, but there is a piece of paper that looks kind of like this under a couple of chairs in here. If you are sitting in a chair that has it underneath, it would be taped up underneath it, so you might have to feel around. No? Nobody? I wasn't sure how many folks were showing up, so they're scattered. Ah, we have a winner. Hooray. Will you get yourself a t-shirt? Thank you so much for coming. There you go. And a big round of applause to our panel. We thank you so much for coming.
Thanks.
Thank you. I'm sure that they wouldn't mind if you connected with them on any of the social platforms. Lisa might not connect with you on Facebook. Todd might not connect with you on Instagram. But Jeff will connect with you pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much.
So thanks so much, guys. We really appreciate it, and thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.